Today on Mr. Media, I'll talk to Ben Fong Torres, best known perhaps for his hundreds of contributions to Rolling Stone magazine in the 1970s. He's now the author of a new coffee table book saluting the 40th anniversary of one of the world's most popular rock bands, the Eagles. Stick around. Apparently, some dance to remember, some dance to forget. We'll discuss. So much media, so little time. Who keeps track of it all? That would be me. This is Bob Andelman, and this is a Mr. Media interview. You know, MrMedia.com, MrMedia.com. Stop by and check it out. There are more than 900 archived celebrity and pop culture interviews for your listening pleasure. Mr. Media is recorded live before a studio audience of guys from Gainesville, Florida, who claim Don Felder still owes them all $10. In the new media capital of the world, St. Petersburg, Florida. How is it possible that 40 years have passed since the birth of the Eagles? You know, the Eagles, Hotel California, Peaceful Easy Feeling, Desperado, Lion Eyes, New Kid in Town, Life in the Fast Lane, those guys. Glenn Frey, Randy Meisner, Bernie Ledden, Don Henley, Don Felder, Timothy B. Schmidt, and Joe Walsh. By the way, why does everyone list Walsh last? Is he like the Ringo Starr of the band? All right, I digress. I know the Eagles story is a remarkable one, but I'd be lying if I said I was a huge fan. I'm really not. I respect their incredible output and enduring success, but the music just never kind of grabbed me the way it did a lot of people at that time. So why are we here today? Well, there's this new coffee table book celebrating the band's lengthy career that was written by Ben Fong Torres, one of America's most successful magazine writers, a man who got his start in the 1970s with Rolling Stone. I wanted to talk to him, and if it meant the subject had to be the Eagles, taking it to the limit, then so be it. And just for the record, when I hosted Rolling Stone writers David Wild and Park Peterbaugh over the years, it wasn't because I was a Neil Diamond or Fish fan either. So Ben Fong Torres, welcome to Mr. Media.
Thank you, Mr. Media. Good to be here.
Good to have you. Let's get the important stuff out of the way first. Ben, dance to remember or dance to forget?
Dance to try to remember at my age. No, you know, it's amazing that you say that about how many people love their music at the time. But the fact is that they're timeless. And it is amazing for a lot of us that whenever they decide, they deign to put it together and get back on the road, there are hundreds of thousands of people out there ready to buy tickets and go through the same songs over and over again 40 years later. So it is a phenomenon, and it's beyond musical taste. It's got to the point where it's some kind of a cultural landmark that you want to see or hear the Eagles. And not only on the radio, where they are still quite dominant in certain formats, but to experience them in person.
Would you have ever predicted back in the 70s that, and I don't know if you have children, but that parents and their children would one day be sharing an appreciation for a band like the Eagles or maybe the Allman Brothers or a lot of the bands from that era?
Yeah, back then, you know, everything was so for the moment, of the moment, and for us, the audience, at our age, that one did not project into the far future. You know, you marveled at that time at Muddy Waters and Howlin' Wolf and other musicians who continue to work into their old age, you know, past their 40s. And now we no longer marvel at that. That's become kind of common. If you can still get out there and do it, like, say, Mick Jagger and gang, you do it. And that's sort of par for the course now, with very few exceptions of people who say, no, that was my time, it's past, and good riddance. But I'm on to the next thing. And that would be like Grace Slick, who has stuck to her promise to not be trying to be a rocker, once she felt like she was too old to do it, and so she stuck to those guns.
I think it's amazing. I took my daughter, I guess it must be 2 years now, I took her to see Bruce Springsteen live. I've got a teenage daughter. And I can't imagine, I know, my parents never took me to any concert, whether it was something that they'd be interested or that I'd be interested in.
Right.
And here I am taking my daughter to see Springsteen, which she, you know, really enjoyed. My memory of that time in the early 70s, I was her age in the early 70s, and my father would scream at me from the bottom of the stairs, "Turn that crap off! That guy can't sing. That's not singing." You know, and here I am taking my kid to see that guy. I mean, it's just crazy.
Oh, well, it's just a generational thing. I'm much older than you, seriously, and so when we talk about my parents' music, it would be the big bands or whatever, or even before. And whereas in the 70s, then our parents would not understand rock and roll, but beginning with our generation, kids grew up with rock and roll, as did the music their parents loved, and therefore the generational divide is less and less as time goes by. There's still a musical divide. There are still parents of our generation who can't understand hip-hop or heavy metal or goth or any number of forms of contemporary music or music that has remained contemporary, but there's a general acceptance of rock as our kind of common musical denominator that did not go on in the generations before. And I'm sure you're aware that you can also take your daughter to the other band out there called Bruce Springsteen and the Sesame Street Band.
No, really?
No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, God. I thought, oh, my God, what a sellout. I can't believe he did that. Well, what is it, what is it about the Eagles that has allowed them to endure? I mean, the Eagles were rock, you know, at a time when Jackson Brown was rock and Linda Ronstadt was rock. But by today's definition, it's not necessarily the same concept of rock and roll as it was then. But and is that why they've endured? Because
no, they've endured because of the music. And the music, I'm not one to categorize music, but I wouldn't agree exactly with your definition of their form of rock.
Okay. They
came along at a time when country rock had been established and when singer-songwriters had come to the fore along the lines of the James Taylors and Carole Kings and Joni Mitchells of the day, and they had already set the stage for that kind of more confessional, more personalized songwriting and singing. And that kind of music, as it turns out, is pretty timeless. If you hear today's singer-songwriters, they echo the music that came 35 years before with no apologies. And so music that is not just a straight-ahead love song, but music that encompasses sometimes some social commentary, a reflection of the times in which they live, and which turns out to be timeless. You know, we're still in economic strife, and we're still having problems with our political leaders. We still have arguments about war, and so some things just remain. And so I think the Eagles' music still speaks to some of those kind of issues and concerns, whether they're political or personal. And then there's the straightforward harmonies that are also timeless. You know, you go back to the Everly Brothers or the Crickets or the Mamas and the Papas, and all through the years of rock, there's always a love of beautiful harmonies and melodies, and the Eagles were expert at that. And those songs endure, and then they were just such a humongous act back before they broke up from the 70s on until the breakup. And then, you know, when they patched things back up for Hell Freezes Over and brought back some newer songs as well as the old, it's just so familiar in a friendly way and in a fairly safe way, I would say, that audiences continue to flock to them. And the younger generation, there's a whole bunch of people, millions of kids who grew up to the music that their parents were listening to, as opposed to what you said before about your own experience with your parents, and they pass that music down. Or the kids going through junior high school and high school saying, what is this rap stuff, man? I don't relate to that. Mm. Or what is this hard rock stuff? I don't get it. You know, I can't understand the words. And so they go to country music, or they go to, heaven forbid, light rock, or they go to music along the lines of the Eagles and Poco and James Taylor and Paul Simon and people like that that are sort of rock and but on the lighter side, and they like it and they stay with it for years and years and years.
Did you find in researching this book and all the work that goes into something like this that you liked the band more than you did before, or less, or about the same?
I would say about the same, because I came into the project liking them. I was a disc jockey on KSAN, a freeform station, back in the, pretty much through the entire decade of the 70s, and the Eagles were a staple on my show by my choice. It was a freeform station, and so you kind of did whatever you wanted, and I often found myself going to Eagle songs because they blended so easily with tunes from, like I mentioned, the Everly Brothers or the Lou Van Brothers or country classics. I'm kind of prone to both country and soul music, but also, you know, you could put a Temptations tune, or Smokey and the Miracles pretty easily next to an Eagles song, and so I often put them into my musical blends on the air. And so I liked them, especially on a musical level, from pretty much the beginning of their careers, and have followed them here and there. And I enjoyed the fact that they were a bunch of pretty smart guys who were also open to dysfunction and to screwing up on the road and in the studios and having problems with their labels and with each other and dealing with egomania, rampant egomania that destroyed the band and friendships over the years. So there's a lot of drama there, and for a rock journalist, that's always fun.
Good way to make enemies, though, right?
Yeah, and you know, and I had a personal connection with them on and off as a journalist, but as evidenced by the first chapter of the book, taking it to the limits. We had that grudge baseball match in Los Angeles back in 1978, so we did that. Then not too long ago, I was on assignment for a magazine and found them in New York City at Madison Square Garden and caught up with them, and that's where the bulk of the more contemporary interviews are from. So, and it's always been pleasant to talk with them. You know, they're funny guys.
If their music is their top legacy, what would be second with the Eagles? Would it be the feuding, the egos? What would be the second thing people will remember them for?
The fact that they lived the rock life to the hilt and chronicled it themselves in songs like "Life in the Fast Lane," then "Desperados," and a few others. They weren't just a bunch of guys showing up for work and saying, oh, this is what rock bands do, so we'll just look this way, we'll sing this way, we'll record these things and hope for the best. They actually exulted in the rock lifestyle and went into it with that in mind of forming a band that was going to have a hell of a lot of fun and also make a ton of money. And it was just the right fusion of talent and of passion and willpower, and just enough friendships forged along the way that they reached and exceeded those goals.
Who would you say is the most overrated and the most underrated member of the Eagles?
I really can't say that there's a really overrated Eagle. I think they've been given just enough credit for the talent and skills that they had and have. And then underrated, I don't know. I would say maybe Randy Meisner, because he was really the voice of a couple of their biggest songs, like Taking It to the Limit. But he himself chose to stay away from the spotlight wherever possible. He certainly had his own ego going on, but on stage, that was his style, and that was no style. And by doing that, by receding from the spotlight, people tend to ignore him except for the one or two spotlight songs that he had as part of the set list. So I think he was kind of undervalued. And but I think Joe Walsh, Don Felder, certainly Glenn and Don Henley, all had tremendous recognition, and you know, they felt like they were all undervalued by the critics. But my book shows that in fact, review by review, they were given strong critical reviews most of the time. I think it was when they themselves began to complain about every negative line that they might find in the media and start whining too much, that then there was more of a pushback by members of the media.
Mm. Ben, one of the really nice features of the book is there's some incredible photography. And while she's not a member of the Eagles, she plays an important part. There's this beautiful photo of Linda Ronstadt from, I guess, from her Stone Pony days.
Mm-hmm.
Just a stunning photo. And I had not heard this story. I knew that, you know, there's this connection among all the California rockers, but I had not real. I had never heard the story about how the nucleus of what became the Eagles started because she needed someone to back her up.
She always needed backup performers after the Stone Ponies had, after she left the Stone Ponies at the behest of management and the record label. And so, yeah, she was out there looking around, and she didn't have far to look because the Troubadour was just a nest of rock activity and potential players. People who were already playing in bands would hang out there. People who were looking for jobs would hang out there. People who were auditioning for Monday Night Hoots at the Troubadour were there. And so, yeah, it was easy for her to find talent. And it was easy for guys to find her because she was extraordinarily gorgeous.
Yeah.
And so people, once they heard that there was a possibility of playing behind Linda, they were all for it. And so her boyfriend and producer at the time probably had a pick of the crop. And in fact, you know, it's kind of a myth that the Eagles were her backup band. They performed as the personnel lineup that became the Eagles only on one occasion, but they kind of were in and out throughout that time period. So there were maybe two of them, and then at one point there might have been three of them, and then maybe four with one of the original guys gone for a while. And then at one moment in Disneyland, they were the future Eagles were behind her. There was an ebb and flow of people, but yeah, there was a moment when it was the Eagles. And they knew right away, once they began playing together, even though they were backing up a female singer, that they had the goods to go up on their own. And they did so with Linda's and John Boylan's blessings.
Now, Ben, do you have a copy of the book anywhere in front of you?
No, I haven't bought one yet.
Oh. Well, I recommend it. I think you should go out and buy one today. But
I'm waiting for the discount on Amazon.
The cover, I hope you'll remember this from memory. The cover photo,
yes.
The black and white photo of the band in front of microphones, and they're standing there. Every time I look at this photo, I swear to you, the person who is second from the left, and I don't know who it is, I keep thinking I'm seeing Linda Ronstadt.
Oh, I'm thinking Graham Parsons. Well, you see,
who is that?
Now, you were asking about the, who was overlooked. That's Randy Meisner.
Oh, is that? Oh my God, I couldn't have planned that better. Is that right?
And they're using Temptations microphones.
Oh, that is too funny.
The splayed out microphones that the Temptations used.
Oh, that's
on
hysterical.
Stage for Motown. And yeah, there you are. But no, Linda Ronstadt is just a little more beautiful than Randy Meisner.
Well, you know, just women in their bras, you know, it could have been her. Randy's just got a little, anyway, changing the subject.
Yeah.
Let's take a quick break. This is Bob Andelman, and you're listening to the Mr. Media Interview with Ben Fong-Torres, whose new book is The Eagles, Taking It to the Limit. We'll be right back. Hey folks, you can hear Mr. Media while on the go now with Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher is a free news and talk mobile app available for your smartphone, whether you use an iPhone, iPod Touch, Android, BlackBerry Curve, or Palm Pre. And when you download Stitcher to hear Mr. Media today, you have a chance to win some real money. Downloading is quick and easy. Just find Stitcher in your smartphone's app store. Download it. It's free. Takes seconds. Then, during registration, hit the promo code box and enter Mr. Media, that's MR Media, to get automatically entered to win $100. The latest episode of Mr. Media will be waiting for you in Stitcher's favorites right on your phone. You'll get access to lots of other amazing shows, too. Always available to you on demand, no syncing. Some of my favorites include WTF with Mark Maron, Plus One Per Diem with Kevin Smith, and The Nerdist with Chris Hardwick. It's all free and all instant to you on Stitcher Smart Radio. And don't forget to win the money. Enter promo code Mr. Media, MR Media, when you register. And thanks for listening.
Help! This is Barbara Eden. Mr. Media has trapped me in a bottle. Will someone please get me out of here?
This is Bob Andelman, and you're listening to the Mr. Media interview with Ben Fong Torres, whose new book is The Eagles, Taking It to the Limit. Ben, I get this strong sense of fondness in the Eagles book for your time at Rolling Stone. What do you remember most about those days?
About the Eagles or about my times at Rolling Stone?
I'm sorry, your times at Rolling Stone. See, as an editor, you're fixing my question. That's
Well, all kinds of stuff. It was really the most extraordinary job one could have, and I was even luckier that I was able to add on top of that long before a lot of people did multimedia stuff. I was on the local radio station doing the weekend show on the Freeform KSAN at the time, and then later on even added some television assignments. But at the magazine office, it really was, it's a cliche, but it really was a family kind of a situation, and you got to know everybody so well, your fellow staffers. And then the assignments and the way we got assignments and gave assignments was extraordinary. It was before the days of focus groups and following the charts to determine who would be featured in the magazine. It was really more of a gut instinct. We had access to the performers much more than media now does, because back then Rolling Stone was really pretty much the only game in town. Mainstream media had not glommed onto rock, amazingly enough. Daily newspapers gave it a short shrift. There was no cable television. There was nothing on, obviously no computers. And so when a performer wanted publicity, the one and best place for it was Rolling Stone. And so Rolling Stone had was able to pick and choose and determine everything. Now it's completely on the other side of it, where the agents and managers and labels and the artists determine who gets to cover them and when they get to show up and how long the interview is going to be, who's going to photograph it, when it's going to be on air or on the cover. And it's a whole completely different world. So I was able to travel with the likes of Lynn Ronstadt and Elton John and the Beatles, the various members of the Beatles, on their airplanes, hang out with them as long as I needed to for a story, sit with a Bob Dylan or the band for as much time as I felt I needed, or as much time as they could stand me being around, and then do the story. And that was all a lot of fun. And yet every 2 weeks we had to crank out a magazine. And so it was also a lot of work. Yeah. So people often will say, hey, man, what a life. You get to hang out with the Stones and you get to travel with George Harrison or whatever. And yeah, all that was fantastic. Being on the bus with Bonnie Raitt, whose opening acts were John Prine and Tom Waits. That's a lot of fun people there. And you're with them day and night, and after a concert they show up and start jamming on the bus or listening to the playback of the concert and making fun remarks about it. And you're there for all that. You're sharing meals with the Rolling Stones. So, but throughout all of that, I was aware that within a couple of days there was a deadline looming. And so you'd be on your airplane flying back to San Francisco writing feverishly on the legal pad your story and then typing it out once you got into the office. So there was a ton of serious work as well as the fun on the road and in the recording studios with the artists. But it was all a tremendous time.
Now, it's interesting that you talked about you know, the availability of so many acts to the writers at Rolling Stone. But your own book sort of undercuts that a little bit because you talk about how the Eagles never made themselves available to be interviewed, right?
Oh, there were always exceptions, of course. The Rolling Stones had a public relations firm whose main job was to keep the press away. So there will always be those. There will always be certain ones who keep their doors shut. But 98% of the major artists of the time were very welcoming and accommodating to the magazine and to a select few others that they felt were important to their careers. And so, no, I would say yes. Of course, you can always point to one or two. But by and large, the rock world was available to us.
Well, now that I've read Keith Richards' memoirs, I kind of understand why they hired a firm to keep the press away.
yeah, they have a few things to hide there.
Wow, what a story. just one last thing, and I know you need to get going. Can you look at today's Rolling Stone with a critical eye and tell us how much it resembles the original, for better or worse?
Well, it shouldn't resemble the original. The world has changed. Media have changed, and the challenges are different. There's just so much out there fighting for the same eyeballs that Rolling Stone used to have to itself. But the most important thing is that the times have changed. And so, and obviously the people who produce Rolling Stone are not the people who were there 30 years before. Mm-hmm. Only one guy exists, remains there. That's Jan Wenner, the publisher, the founder, and still the hands-on editor-in-chief. So you can't go in there expecting it. But the foundation, the general backbone of it is still pretty much the same. The liberal politics, the candor, the access to the most important artists of the time. Flashing back to the 60s and 70s, to me, it's kind of weird to see George Harrison on the cover, but of course it's timed to the Scorsese documentary on HBO.
Right.
And so, but you know, they seem to welcome embracing Dylan and Harrison and the Beatles and the rest of the Beatles and like that through all the years, even though everybody's into Gaga and other contemporary acts, but they cover them too. And to some people, to a fault, you know, maybe it's too top 40 or whatever. Mm. But Rolling Stones always tried to reflect the mainstream as well as artists out of the mainstream. And so they continue to work that balance. Mm. How successfully depends on your own perspective and your own history with the magazine. For me, it's just amazing that they have survived through all of the changes, all of the years, and all of the competition.
All right. Well, folks, listen, you can order writer Ben Fong-Torres' new book, The Eagles, Taking It to the Limit, in great bookstores everywhere, or you can order it right now at a great price at MrMedia.com, MRMedia.com. And Ben, I know you've got a website. You want to tell everybody what the address is?
No, not really.
Okay, fine. Let's move on.
I'm hiring a publicist to keep him away from my website. it's simply BenFong-Torres.com. And it has all the stuff you would expect to find, including the other book that came out this fall. It was a reprint of an expanded version of my memoir, and it's called The Rice Room, and that's out now, too, from University of California Press.
Oh.
And the Eagles book is from, what is it from, Running Press?
You're asking me? Yes, I believe it is
Running Press.
Running Press
from Carlton Books in London. There you are.
Some good folks at Running Press.
Right. Well, thank you, Mr. Media. I appreciate that you're taking time to hunt me down and and put me on.
My pleasure. My pleasure. I'm old enough to go way back with the Ben Fong-Torres byline, and a definite treat for me. And Ben, thank you so much for joining us on Mr. Media today.
My pleasure. Thank you, Bob.
Thank you. For more original interviews, surf over to our main website, MrMedia.com, MRMedia.com. If you've enjoyed today's show, subscribe for free to Mr. Media via email, RSS, or iTunes, and you'll never miss a show. Another good idea, download our new free Mr. Media mobile app in the Android market. And you can also listen with a piece of string and a tin can in many parts of the Internet. Show your support of Mr. Media by supporting our sponsors, including Audible. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/radio. Again, that's audibletrial.com/radio for your free audiobook. We're also supported by thepartyauthority.us. Call DJ Ira for all your party entertainment needs nationwide at 1-800-DIAL-DJS or visit their website, thepartyauthority.us. If you've got an idea for a guest, a comment on today's show, or would like to advertise on Mr. Media Radio, email me directly at bob@mrmedia.com, mrmedia.com. You can also call our 24-hour listener line at 1-727-498-4711. Some messages may be used in an upcoming show. And unless you live next door to Mr. Media, there may be a toll charge. You can also follow Mr. Media on Facebook, Twitter, or our new YouTube and Vimeo video channels. Thanks so much for joining us today. I always appreciate you sharing a piece of your day with Mr. Media. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching.
Hi, this is Ron Dante of the Archies. You're listening to Mr. Media, and he'll get no sugar from me today unless he plays my record.